This is the beginning of chapter 37, verses 1 and 2. Sukadev Goswami said, who remembers something from the last chapter? That's not what he said, but that's what I said. Who remembers something from the last chapter? Think for a second. Everyone think. Means the last class, which means 20 minutes plus ago, a half hour plus. Think. Without looking, just remember.
Hamsa was expert in artha and kama, but not in dharma and moksha.
Mm. Thank you. Anyone else remember anything?
Narada Muni is a very salient person, a great expert at stirring things up like him.
Yes. But the reason why he does this is going to be explained in this chapter. So please listen very carefully. And remember anything else? Yes.
Akula was completely confident that it comes again until Krishna came to Balaram. And therefore he agreed to take
it. He knew his desire would be fulfilled and that Kamsa's desire would not be fulfilled. And what is the meaning of abhutta karmana? Yes, and who is the one who performs wonderful activities? What verse was that in? Does anyone remember the verse number? 16. And what turned out from the abhutta karmana of the killing of Aristasura according to the purport? Radhakun, Saimakun, but not Giri Govardhan. That was a different time. So wonderful. All this is done in the ecstasies. All these activities are done in the ecstasies of association with Krishna. And even we said that the blinking of an eye would cause the resonance of Vrindavan. So much feelings of separation. But at least when the eye blinks, or when Krishna walks behind a tree and the cowherd boys cannot see him, or he goes to the forest and the elders are in anxiety because he comes back after killing it. The boys are saying so many demons attack Krishna, so the elders are in so much anxiety because their beloved is under so much the stress of demons always trying to kill him. But at least when he goes off in the day, there is the feeling, yes, he's coming back at night. And when the eye blinks, there is the usual experience of it opening again. And when he walks behind the tree, he's actually only walking behind the tree. But now, oh, we won't talk about that. We won't talk about what is soon going to happen. Because we don't have so much experience of love for Krishna, therefore we don't have so much experience of love and separation. So Sukadev Goswami said, but all this is taking place, all these pastimes, when Krishna's performing his wonderful heroic activities, and all of Vrindavan is talking about, this is taking place, these are all taking place within the frame of reference of seeing Krishna each and every day. Each and every day. Not being able to tolerate the nightfall, because one wouldn't see Krishna if one was a coward boy or a cow, but at least every day, every day, every day, seeing this most beautiful, attractive, sweet, clever person. Sukadev Goswami said, the demon Keshi sent by Kamsa, that was the first thing Kamsa did in his Rajniti diplomacy, was to send Keshi to kill Krishna. He appeared in Braja as a great horse. Running with the speed of the mind, he tore up the earth with his hooves. The hair in his mane scattered the clouds and the demigods' airplanes throughout the sky, and he terrified everyone present with his loud neighing. So Keshi entered. And this verse gives us some idea of how powerful and therefore terrifying Keshi was. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw how the demon was frightening his village of Gokul by neighing terribly and shaking the clouds with his tail, the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi was searching for Krishna to fight. So when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach, the horse responded by roaring like a lion. So he, "Oh, you've come to fight me? Okay, here I am." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we'll just read the Srila Swami's comment here. "By killing in the same manner as he killed the demon who appeared as a bull, Aristasura, the demon Keshi, who assumed the form of a horse, and who was an intimate friend of Kamsa, sent by him, Krishna rendered Kamsa as if lifeless. By killing him, Kamsa had no more hope, practically speaking." This verse beginning Keshi recounting with the first verse the description of what Keshi was like. The idea connecting to the second verse is that the Lord called out to that Keshi. Keshi had a huge body. He was loosening the earth. In other words, he was tearing it asunder with his hoofs, just by the stepping of his hoofs. The clouds also and the aeroplanes and the demigods were tossed about hither and thither by the hairs of his mane, thus crowding the sky with his mane and the aeroplanes. He was terrifying the whole world with his neighing. By that harsh neighing, a horrible sound, a piercing sound, not a sweet sound, by whose tail hairs, his tail, the clouds became swirled about, moving all about. He came out for the purpose of a fight. Krishna did. It means he came out right in front of Keshi. And thus he called out to him. He called him, "Come near. You want to fight? Come near me." And after hearing that, Keshi made a sound with his neighing like a lion. Who do you think will win this battle? 3. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran towards him in extreme rage. So Krishna increased his rage by, in his own way, we'll see what he does, but also by saying, "Come on, you want to fight? Let's fight then." His mouth gaping as if to swallow the sky. His mouth was made large. So huge was it when he opened it. It was as if to swallow the sky. And he rushed forwards towards Krishna with furious speed. Furious means angry. The unconquerable and unapproachable horse. You couldn't get near him because he was so ferocious and heavy. This unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. So what does... Where are these wonderful garlands from? Huh? Wow. So what does it mean that a horse, when he tries to strike one with his legs, his front legs, what does he do? What does that mean he does? He's rearing up on his back legs, and then he moves his front hoofs and strikes you as he comes down with so much force. And he tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord. So the indication is how gentle and soft the Lord's body is. His so many parts of the Lord's body is. And on the other hand, the Keshi's hoofs are so hard. You still think Krishna's going to win? What do you think? Huh? Maybe not. Yes, maybe not. What do you think the residents of Vrindavan were thinking? They were terrified. What? This horse is so huge and powerful. And here's the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami. 2-3. Keshi, seeing Krishna, went forward as if he were drinking the sky with his mouth. Wow. His mouth was open so wide. Or in other words, having his mouth wide open. Furthermore, he was extremely angry, or else he was feeling very intolerant. And he struck Krishna with his foot. Durdasada means impossible to defeat by any other means. And Dratyaya means determined and impossible to pass beyond. We're familiar with that word Dratyaya. It refers to Maya in our famous verse. Yes? Mayam? What's the verse? Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dratya. Impossible to pass beyond. For this reason, it is stated that the speed he was of his running was fierce. Text 4. And but the transcendental Lord, so we know as soon as there is a but, we know that something's going to happen. The transcendental Lord, the all-powerful Supreme Lord, whose eyes are like a lotus, who's unlimitedly powerful. He dodged Keshi's blow with his hoofs, and then with his arms, he angrily seized the demon by the legs. He whirled him around in the air, and contemptuously means he did not regard him with seriousness. Even though he's described as so powerful, Krishna did not take him seriously. He contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths, 600 feet, 200 meters. And he did this just as Garuda might throw a snake, and Krishna just stood there. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna, the horse was huge, tremendous, monstrous, and Krishna threw him 600, how far is 600 feet from here? Anyone a good judge of distance from here to the yeah, 2 football fields, maybe even further. Maybe to that boundary over there. Not maybe somewhere. But threw him so far without moving, without standing there, without moving and winding up or anything. He just threw him. So Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. His form is filled with unlimited power. Krishna is the controller of all the laws of material nature that make an object move. We say the law of gravity, the law of mass and momentum and speed, and all these different laws. Krishna is the controller of those laws. He just threw him so far. So he, the demon, in his anger, was repulsed contemptuously by Krishna. Sridhar Swami comments, avoiding that strike of the hoofs and seizing the 2 legs which had been kicked forward to hit him in that way, he twirled him around, spun him around, and remained standing in that position. 5. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up. So he was really angry. What? You've done this to me? But he hasn't understood the limit of Krishna's unlimited power. No one can understand that. So he got up. He opened his mouth wide. And he again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. He opened his mouth to bite him. Srila Srila Swami comments, Vyadaya means his opened his mouth wide. He swiftly ran towards Lord Hari, and that Lord Hari put his left arm in his mouth. An example of Lord Krishna's fearlessness is given just as a snake enters a hole in the ground with no fear. Because there is a danger if you put your hand in the mouth of a lion or a horse, what's the danger? That he's going to go bite down and chop your hand off, your whole arm off. But Krishna did this fearlessly. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to text 5. Kesi stood up after regaining his consciousness, opened his mouth wide, and charged again. Krishna just laughed and showed his left thumb and said, because his mouth was open, "Do you want to eat something? Well then here, eat this." And Krishna's wild. Krishna then thrusts his left arm in Kesi's open mouth to kill him, just as a snake easily enters a hole to kill a mouse. 6. Kesi's teeth, Danta Nipatur Bhagavad Bhuja Sprisha. Kesi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron, which is very hot. Within Kesi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded. First it was heat, then it expanded greatly, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. Srila Srila Swami comments, and then what happened? This is stated by the verse beginning, Danta. As his teeth spread out in a wide open mouth, were touching the Supreme Lord's arm to chew it. He was actually going to chew it. They felt it to be like iron, or else they felt that they were touching extremely hot, like iron. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Alas, alas, how could Krishna place his arm, which was tender as the stem of a blue lotus, into the mouth of Kesi, which was filled with fierce teeth?" Anticipating such an objection by the disturbed Pariksit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami answers in this verse, "As Kesi's teeth touched Krishna's arm to chew on it, they became uprooted and fell out, just as if contacting a red-hot iron. Although Krishna's arm is softer and more cooling than a blue lotus, to Kesi it felt as hard and hot as a thunderbolt, just as a jaundiced person perceives sugar candy as bitter. Krishna's arm expanded within Kesi's mouth until he died, just as Krishna expanded his body within the mouth of Agasura." 7. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Kesi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground dead. The mighty arm Krishna withdrew his arm from Kesi's body, which now appeared like a long karkatika fruit. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, or surprise or anything, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. Srila Srila Swami comments, text 8. When the karkatika fruit is fully ripe, it becomes extremely long in shape. Krishna withdrew his arm from the similarly extended body of Kesi, from which the life air had left. Asvimita means free of pride. He who had killed his enemy without effort. That was Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Keshi's body burst open like an overripe melon. In spite of killing the big demon, Krishna was not proud, since he did it very easily. The demigods sprinkled flowers and fine drops of water to dispel Krishna's fatigue. What a beautiful scene. 9. My dear king, thereafter Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the Surishi, the Devarishi, the great sage amongst the demigods, Narada Muni. Narada Muni had just incited Kamsa by giving him knowledge of who Krishna was and who where Krishna's birth had taken place. And now he's coming to fulfill the second part of his mission right now, and that was to speak to Krishna. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performs his pastimes. So that Narada's words are in the next 14 verses, 10 through 23. Srila Sridhar Swami comments to text 9. After advising Kamsa about Krishna with clever words concerning the truth of his identity and so forth, the sage Narada announced to Krishna his, Krishna's, own future activities, such as the killing of Kamsa. This is described in the verse beginning Devarshi, and this Narada is not merely a gossip monger, he's just not speaking just to talk, as stated by the word Bhagavat Parvaraha. Means Bhagavat Pavara means the most exalted devotee. He has a purpose. And what's his purpose in doing this? Both speaking to Kamsa and speaking to Krishna. His purpose is Krishna's purpose. Narada Muni said, this is 10 through 11. Over here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also comments on 9. Now that your Braja Leela is completed, please show your Mathura Leela. Thus requesting Sri Krishna, Narada Muni, the sage amongst the demigods, praised his Lord and Master. Narada is called Bhagavata Pavar because he fulfilled the exalted desires of the devotees in Mathura. He spoke to Krishna, who had effortlessly killed the ferocious Keshi demon. So now Krishna, it's time for Krishna to wind up his Braja Leela, and Narada Muni's task is to assist in this. So he's going to make some devotees, the devotees in Mathura, so happy, and he's going to plunge the Brajavasis into a fathomless, bottomless ocean of transcendental ecstasy in the form of separation. They won't even know whether they're alive or dead. Narada Muni says, Krishna Krishna Prameyatman Yogesha Jagadishara Vasudeva Kilavasa Satvatam Pravara Prabhu Tvamatmasava Bhutanam Eko Jyotirivadasam Gudo Guha Saya Shakshi Mahaparusha Ishvara. O Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord. This is the first time we're hearing how Krishna is seen by Narada in Braja. O unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe. O Vasudev, shelter of all beings and best of the yadus. This is the person who's been displaying these Vrindavan pastimes. O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart like the fire dormant within kindling wood. This is the person who has been wandering throughout the land of Braja with no shoes on, herding cows, just like a coward boy. You are the witness within everyone, the Supreme Personality and the ultimate controlling deity. Srila Sridhar Swami says, don't be afraid that I may have revealed your secret to the enemy Kamsa, which Narada states by the verse beginning, Krishna, Krishna. The idea is follows. You are the Supreme Lord. In other words, it's not, even though I've superficially acted as Krishna's enemy by telling everything about Krishna to Kamsa and seemingly being the cause of the impending death of Krishna. But don't be afraid. The idea is as follows. You are the Supreme Lord, having descended for the purpose of annihilating the demons who are a burden to the earth. Therefore, please sustain the universe by performing deeds suitable to this purpose. In this regard, one should not imagine that you are at all afraid. As stated, Apreyamatma, you whose form is unlimited, O Yogesh, you whose influence is inconceivable. You can affect every event and every circumstance. O Jagadishwara, you control the entire universe. O Vasudev, you who are present within all living beings. O Akhilavas, you are the shelter of all. O you who are now the best, the Pariva, Parava Shrestha of the Sattvatis. O Prabhu, O Master, you possess all potencies. So he's glorifying Krishna. Suddenly there is an influx of great Aishwarya, knowledge of Krishna, Aishwarya Gyan, great knowledge of Krishna's actual position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his power. So this is how the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam proceeds. There is Leela, then there is this Aishwarya Gyan, so we don't forget who Krishna is. Then there is some more Leela, then there is some more Aishwarya Gyan, and then some more Leela, and some more Aishwarya Gyan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to text 10.11. Narada calls out Krishna's name twice, Krishna, Krishna, out of great bliss, while thinking himself as just a semblance of a devotee. What does semblance mean? Just resembles a devotee, not actually a devotee, because he's in Braja now. He's seen the topmost limit of devotion exhibited by the Brijvasis. While thinking himself as just a semblance of a devotee who praises the Lord by the sankirtan of his holy names, Narada said, no one can measure or understand your mind. Therefore, who can ascertain what is on your mind? Whether you intend to remain in Braja, giving joy to your parents and the other Brijvasis, or whether you will go to Mathura. No one can ascertain what is on your mind. He's pushing in his indirect way. As the controller of Yogamaya, you can easily stay in both places without difficulty. It is not clear what you're going to do. As the master of the universe, you must kill the demons who burden the earth. So you have to do something in Mathura. It is your time to kill Kamsa. You are famous as the son of Nanda, but now you should become known as the son of Vasudeva. After generating his good fortune, thus generating his good fortune, therefore come live in Mathura and relieve all your devotees there from their fear of Kamsa. You are the best, the pravar, fulfiller of desires, and the best amongst the yadus, the sattvatam. Thus, O Master Prabhu, you can do anything. Krishna replied, I act according to my desires, so why are you making a request from me? Narada answered, you are the supersoul within me, Twamatma, who gave me the inspiration to request you, so what can I do? So this is why, what is impelling Narada Muni to act in the way that he does, to talk to Kamsa, to talk to Krishna, to perform so many activities in his lila, to visit Dwarka, as we will hear later. He is impelled by Krishna. Listen, he is carrying Krishna's bhakti shakti. You dwell not only in my heart, but within the hearts of all living beings. You remain hidden just like fire within wood. Just as you rest in the caves of Govardhan as Nanda's son, you rest within the heart as the supersoul, the cave of the heart. Though you are resting in the heart, you are the witness of everything. Thus, you are the greatest person. When someone is in a cave, they cannot see what's going on. But when Krishna is in the cave, he still knows everything. He's the witness of all, even when he's within the cave of the heart. Thus you are the greatest person, the Mahapurusha, with the power to do anything. Generally, even great persons have someone above them with more power, but you alone are the supreme controller, the Ishwara of everyone. So he's glorifying Krishna in this way. Text 12. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning the primal modes of material nature, and through their agency, you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. So this is Krishna in relationship. To him being the supreme controller, the creator and maintainer of the universe, and everything is happening by his desire and by his will and by his personal creative potency. And there Krishna has just performed his Braja Leela, which has been so incredible. And remember, Narada Muni's words are coming very soon after the most incredible pastime of Krishna, his Rasa Leela pastimes. Putting them into the most amazing perspective, that this is how the Supreme Lord chooses to act and interact in imitation. Well, we could say also that the activities of this world are imitation of Krishna's, but like the activities of young boys and young girls, exchanging the most intimate love in his relationship with his most intimate, trustworthy devotees. Read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Narada enters his... Oops. How do you say, Krishna comments, how do you say that I'm the controller and everyone else is controlled? This objection is replied to by the verse beginning Atmana. The independent shelter who does not depend on any other means of becoming an independent shelter, he's completely independent. By your Maya potency, you have created the modes. And by them, by those created modes, you create, destroy, and maintain this universe. But the Lord may object, the activities of affecting the cause and so forth seem to be affected by the six kinds of causal factors, corresponding to the six noun cases, Sanskrit technical terms. This is answered by the word satya sankalpa, implying that in that which is accomplished simply by desiring it, there is no dependence on any external means of accomplishment. So Krishna, by his desire, everything happens. He's not dependent on the modes. He's not dependent on anything or anyone. Thus, in summary, you are the supreme controller. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, if you had not created myself, my intelligence, and the rest of the universe, then I would not be able to make any requests from you. With this intention, Narada speaks. Narada said, you are independent and the shelter of all souls. By your energies, which are none different from your Atma, you create the elements starting from the Mahatattva. As you create this world, you also inspire everyone to fulfill their own desires. In this way, although I am another separate person, I am trying to request you. 13. You, that very same creator, have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramatta, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. He seems to be reminding Krishna of the purpose of his advent, because it's time for him to leave Braja, which completely captivates Krishna, so he doesn't want to remember anything, any other purpose. So Narada is inspired to do this. This is the purpose of one of the, perhaps we can say, external purpose of Krishna's advent. 13. Srila Swami comments. Narada enters his main topics with this verse beginning Satvam. Those who are in the form of kings, who are called Bhudaras because they hold on to the earth. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Narada continued, therefore I have come today to make a request. You are the creator mentioned in the previous verse, and you have appeared to protect the devotees and destroy the demons posing as kings. The horse demon, Keshi, was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him. You've turned it into a sport. For your information, Keshi was Aristasura, the bull demon, symbolizes disregard for bhakti and attraction for cheating religion. And Keshi, the illusion of being a great devotee or acharya, is represented by Keshi. Lording it over others and material pride must be given up. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains Keshi. Now, this is about Aristasura. Many weak-hearted persons give up the path of regulative principles and enter the path of attachment, ragmarg. When they are unable to realize the soul's spiritual attachment, the soul's spiritual attachment means true attachment to Krishna, they behave like Aristasura, the bull, by cultivating perverted material desires, material attachment. They will be killed by the prowess of Krishna. The example of this obstacle is regularly found amongst the selfish Dharmadwajis, the show bottle devotees. Listen to Keshi. Keshi, a demon in the form of a horse, personifies the practitioner's conception of being more expert than others in devotional service. When he comes to Braja, Keshi, he creates a great disturbance because of that mentality. As a Vaishnava gradually begins proclaiming his own superiority, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord arises and the devotee falls from his position. Therefore, it is most important to prevent this evil mentality from entering the heart. And what is that evil mentality? Feel superior to others, and pridefulness, and springing from that will come disrespect to the devotees and ultimately the Lord. Even if one is expert in devotional service, a Vaishnava will never give up the quality of
humility.
Even one, if one does so, then there is a need for killing Keshi. Resting in the heart, pridefulness. He was so arrogant. This is the 18th obstacle. So Narada Muni mentions Keshi, and you enjoyed the sport of killing him. He was so powerful, everyone was afraid, frightened of him, terrified of him, but you killed him as a sport. It was effortless for you. 15 through 20. In just 2 days, O Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mastika, and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalayapita and King Kamsa, all by your hand. Then I will see you kill Kaliyavana, Mura, Naraka, and the Kansh demon. Who is the Kansh demon? Panchajanya. Sankachuda was the arrogant fellow who appeared in the holy dance, the holy festival. Then I will see you kill Kaliyavana, Mura, Naraka, and the Kans demon. This is all later chapters. I will also see you steal the Parijata flower and defeat Indra. I will then see you marry many daughters of heroic kings after paying for them with your valor. Then, O Lord of the universe, in Dwarka, you will deliver King Nriga from a curse and take for yourself the Shamataka jewel together with another wife. Who is that other wife? Jambavati. You will bring back a Brahman's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj, and thereafter you will kill Pondraka. You will burn down the city of Kashi in relationship to killing of Pondraka, and annihilate Dantavakra. And who was killed with Dantavakra? No? Vidyarata. And then, soon as Krishna kills these last two demons, he crosses the Yamuna River and enters Braja again. But it will take some time before he returns. You will annihilate Dantavakra and the king of Chedi during the great Rajasuya sacrifice. I shall see all these heroic pastimes along with many others you will perform during your residence in Dwarka. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of transcendental poets. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on these six verses, 15 to 20. On the day after tomorrow, today, Akura will come. Tomorrow, you will go to Mathura. And the day after tomorrow, I will see Chanura and the others killed by you. In this manner, Narada is making his special kind of declaration in which one points out future events as if they had already occurred. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Narada said, I know the sequence of your pastimes, having already seen them in various previous descents. This is only an outline of your future pastimes, and it is not intended to be a comprehensive account. I will see you kill Panchajana, the Sankha demon, Shank, Kansh. I will watch you retrieve the Shamataka jewel along with your wife, Baryaya, Jambavati, and you will deliver a Brahmin's son from the abode of Yamaraj. Who is the Brahmin? Sandipani Muni. 21. Subsequently, I will see you appear as time personified, Kalosmin Lokachaya Krit, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. You will destroy everyone, all these demons, in the form of time. 22. Let us approach you. These are the last two verses as Narada glorifies Krishna. Let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things. He's done that in Vrindavan especially. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. I bow down to you, this is 23, the Supreme Controller, who are dependent only on yourself. So I'm not telling you what to do, you will do what you want. You are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangements of this universe. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero amongst the Yadus, Vishnis, and Satvatas, and you have chosen to participate in human warfare. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on 22. Having thus expressed himself and been happily acknowledged by the Lord, Narada, now offers his obeisances to him in these two verses, beginning Vishuddha, Vishuddha vijnana ghanam swasamstaya. Beginning, Vishuddha Vijnana Ghanam. Him whose personal form is composed exclusively of awareness, consciousness, and who therefore achieves in full all desired objects, being in his perfect situation, in his original identity, the direct manifestation of all ecstasy. This states he's the direct manifestation of all ecstasy. Think about what that means. How much happiness is all ecstasy? That is Ananda. His form, this is what his form is composed of. Everything he's done is composed of this form of full consciousness and ecstasy and knowledge, awareness, and existence. So effulgent, so unlimitedly powerful. This states how all his desires are fulfilled and how his intentions are automatically realized, is stated by the words Amogya Vanchitam. But if I had any desire, Krishna is responding, but if I had any desire, this is the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami, but if I had any desire, wouldn't that make it impossible for me to avoid the entanglement of material existence? After all, the Jnanis say that it is desire that causes us, that entangles us, and desire causes us to act. In answer to this are spoken the words beginning, Swatejasa. He who has, by his internal potency, desisted eternally from the flowing current of the modes of nature produced from the illusory energy Maya. Therefore, let us approach him for shelter, the Supreme Lord, whose opulences are unexcelled. No one's opulences are greater than his. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. After describing the future pastimes of Krishna, Narada offers his respects in two verses. I offer my respects to you, O Lord, who are the concentrated Brahman, or spiritual essence, and the ultimate object of spiritual realization. All the desires of the devotees reside completely in you, who exist eternally along with your associates. You mercifully fulfill all those desires through your potency, or else by the potency of your pure devotees. You help them every day to avoid the influence of the modes of material nature. And the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to 23. But why do you, who are the knower of all three phases of time, not know my material origin? And if you do know it, why do you say that for me there is no flux of material nature? This is the response of Krishna, playing the part as if an ordinary person speaking to Narada. You know everything, past, present, and future. Then you should know that I'm also produced by the material world. Why do you say that there is no influence or movement of the modes of material nature in me? This is replied to in the verse beginning, Tvam. Ishwara means the controller of others, and Swaishwara means not under anyone else's control. Therefore, I bow down to that best Shrestham of the Yadavas, by whom, through his Atma Mayana, his Maya, which is subordinate to him, all the unlimited particular arrangements of creation, beginning with the Mahatattva, and also including such entities as the Yadu dynasty, have been constructed. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on 23. Narada said, there is no one like you. He's seeing Krishna there in Vrindavan. There is no one like you. You have the power to control all others. You are self-contained, not under the shelter of anyone. All others must take shelter of you. So Ishara Srayam means... Sva Asrayam means that Krishna does not depend on anyone else. Therefore, he is not under anyone else's control. Narada continued, Krishna, you create this variegated universe by Maya, who is subordinate to you. Your only object is to play. You will fight with humans like Kamsa after killing Keshi, who is Kamsa's very life. I offer respects to you. An alternate reading, Narada said, all this is simply your play in order to protect your relatives, the Yadus, the Vrishnis, and the Satvatis. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Narada bowed down and offered him obeisances. Then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy at having directly seen him. After killing the Keshi demon in battle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead continued to tend the cows and other animals in the company of his joyful cowherd boyfriends. So how wonderful it is. Narada interjected and brought in knowledge, brought to us knowledge of who Krishna actually is, his potencies, etc., how powerful he is, how independent he is. So Krishna is full aware of this, certainly. If he wasn't before, Narada Muni has just told him. So then, when one gets knowledge, just like if someone tells you, guess what? You have $1 billion. It's yours. How would that change your life? Don't think about it too much. But if it didn't change your life at all, what would that mean? It would mean you're happy with your life as it is, doing what you're doing. So what does Krishna do after Narada Muni speaks to him of his opulences? It is important that we note that. He continued to tend the cows and other animals in the company of his joyful cowherd boyfriends. That's just what Krishna wants to do. It's what he wanted to do and is what he will want to do. Thus he brought happiness to all the residents of Vrindavan. Pritar Braja Sukhavaha. This is Krishna's personal happiness. To bring happiness to the residents of Vrindavan. One day, not very much in the future, because Narada said the day after tomorrow this is going to happen, Akura is going to come, arrive, and you're going to leave. One day the cowherd boys, while grazing their animals on the mountain slopes, played the game of stealing and hiding, acting out the role of thieves and herders, of rival thieves and herders. This is fun. More fun for Krishna than even killing Kamsa. But it may be rejected. Narada did not see the killing of Vyoma, so how did he come to mention it? Srila Sridhar Swami goes back that Vyomasura was mentioned in the people who are the demons, the asuras that Krishna would kill. This is explained that early in the morning, directly following the killing of Kesi, having accepted the statement of Narada kill Vyoma as predicted, Krishna once again engaged in grazing the animals. So it appears from Sridhar Swami's statement that right after Narada came, he killed, if I've understood it correctly, he killed Kesi. Or else we should ascertain, although the killing of Kesi actually occurred previously, it is mentioned in this later context because of its being related to the killing of the demon who dressed himself as a cowherd boy, Vyomasura. There are yet others who interpret the killing of Kesi as having occurred even before the killing of Sankachuda. So there's different time placements of the killing of Kesi. In that game, O king, some acted as thieves, some of the cowherd boys, others as shepherds, and others as sheep. They played their game happily without fear of danger. A powerful magician named Vyoma, the son of the demon Maya, then appeared on the scene in the guise disguised as a coward boy. Pretending to join the game as a thief, he proceeded to steal most of the coward boys who were acting as sheep. Gradually, the great demon abducted more and more of the coward boys and cast them into a mountain cave, which he sealed shut with a boulder. Finally, only four or five boys acting as sheep remained in the game. Lord Krishna, the shelter of all saintly devotees, understood perfectly well what Vyoma Shore was doing. Just as a lion grabs a wolf, Krishna forcibly seized the demon as he was taking away more coward boys. The demon changed into his original form, as big and powerful as a great mountain. But, try as he might to free himself, he could not do so, having lost his strength from being held in the Lord's tight grip. Lord Achyuta clutched Vyoma's sword between his arms and threw him to the ground. Then, while the demigods in heaven looked on, Krishna killed him in the same way that one kills a sacrificial animal. That means by strangulating him, choking them. Krishna then smashed the boulder blocking the cave's entrance and led the trapped cowherd boys to safety. Thereafter, as the demigods and cowherd boys sang his glories, he returned to his cowherd village of Gokul. Let's see if I can find that comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's. Krishna killed Vyomasura in the same way in which a sacrificial animal is slaughtered, namely by suffocation through strangulation. Just as Vyomasura had tried to kill the coward boys by suffocating them when he locked them in a cave. So he held them and he held them in his between his arms so he couldn't breathe. And then he threw him to the ground and then smashed open the boulder that was blocking the cave where Vyomasura had put the boys. And thus ends, and Vyomasura is the last demon that Krishna is going to kill in Vraja. And Vyomasura represents thieves and fake devotees. One might say fake devotees who come in as devotees and steal. Now, tomorrow we won't have a class. Tomorrow's Ekadasi. So please take extra time for chanting Krishna's holy names. And also, tomorrow is actually Mahadwadasi. And the next day is what? So how does one break the Ekadasi? On Nityananda Trayodasi.
You have Varaha's appearance day, and that's like a half day fast on Ekadasi.
Yeah. Because Varaha's appearance day is the Dwadasi, so there's a peculiar combination.
On the day that we're fasting for Ekadasi.
That's for.
They're not something else in the morning, but it's the practice to fast on the Ekadasi, which has happened the day before.
That's for Varaha Dwadasi.
Yeah.
But how about for the Nityananda Trayodasi? Right, but you have to break the Ekadasi, that's the point.
So you can take a little.
Yeah. Because on Nityananda Trayodasi, very often we don't take grains, that's the issue.
Yeah. Okay. But usually there's a day.
Yeah, because the Trayodasi and Dwadasi and Mahadwadasi, but today. It's all compressed. 2 and 3, or 3 and 2. So the conclusion is there's no fasting at all on Nityananda Trayodasi. Is that what's being, that's the standard that's. Huh?
For an occasion, so
yeah. But usually we fast until moonrise.
Mm-hmm.
So On Nityananda's appearance day, yes?
No?
Noon?
Feasting was 2, and it was a Kodasi feast at 2, last year here.
Okay. So, okay, thank you.
No conclusion.
Spoke the same
problem. Okay. So, are there any questions? Comments?
So, you're not going to have a class come out?
Right. Because I finished the part that I was supposed to finish. It was a short part. I'm going to try and chant. I'm going to try and chant extra.
In his Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts Vyamasura as number 14. And the last demon killed is Kashyapa.
Yes.
Seems to be quite logical that the last obstacle would be the pride. But in Bhagavatam, it comes, Yamasura is coming here.
Yes. And also in his Sikshamrita, he puts Yamasura in the order of the Bhagavatam. Yeah. If we don't have many questions, I would like to read all the. What Bhaktivinoda Thakur what he says about the different demons. In Krishna Samhita, he gives sometimes more, calling them obstacles. He gives a little more explanation as he did about Keshi and Aristasura. Did you have a question, though?
He killed by Devaki's son, the eighth son. But it's her name is Yashoda.
So she was Yashoda's eighth son, but it actually wasn't, the prediction wasn't son.
Yeah, that's true.
It was child, really.
Prediction was not son?
No. The Sanskrit is.
The argument for Devaki that Kansa shouldn't kill her. The girl child, because it was predicted that he was going to.
He understood it in that way. What's the Sanskrit of that one? Huh?
Pregnancy.
Yeah, the pregnant, the embryo, the eighth embryo.
And there's no gender on that embryo?
No. But anyway, how could a girl kill him? She'll marry your son. What's the problem?
How could that? Well, Putana was a girl.
But that's what. The mood. Yes, women can kill also. It's true. But he's saying, what do you have to fear from her? Just a baby girl. Innocent. So we'll read this in the Krishna Samhita. Is up to from text 13 to 31, describing the in a little detail on these demons and how they affect bhakti. There are 18 obstacles that pollute one's ecstatic love in the wonderful mood of braja. Contemplating the names of these obstacles is the indirect consideration of the mood of braja. Persons who are on the path of attachment should avoid the first obstacle, accepting a bogus guru, by discussing Putana's arrival in Braja in the guise of a nurse. There are two types of gurus, antaranga, or internal, or bahiranga, or external. The living entity who is situated in samadhi is his own antaranga guru. One who accepts argument as his guru and who learns the process of worship from such a guru is said to have accepted the shelter of a bogus guru. When argument poses as nourishment for the living entity's constitutional duties, this may be compared with Putana's falsely posing as a nurse. Worshippers on the path of attachment must immerse all arguments in spiritual subjects and take shelter of samadhi. The external guru is he from whom the science of worship is learned. One who knows the proper path of attachment and who instructs his disciples according to their qualifications is a sadguru, or eternal guru. One who does not know the path of attachment yet instructs others in this path, or who knows that path and instructs his disciples without considering their qualification, is a bogus guru and must be given up. The second obstacle is false arguments. It is difficult for one's ecstatic emotion to be awakened until Trinavarta, in the form of a whirlwind, is killed in Braja. In the form of Trinavarta, the arguments of philosophers, Buddhists, and logicians are all obstacles to the ecstatic emotion of Braja. Those who do not understand the purpose of the regulative principles, but simply carry the burden of following them out of formality, are unable to develop attachment. When one destroys Shakata, who personifies carrying the burden of the regulative principles, the third obstacle is overcome. Both Shakata, sure, the cart demon.
What is it? What is it representing?
The burden of the regulative principles without keeping in mind what the purpose of the regulative principles are. This is from the Krishna Samhita. Bogus gurus who did not consider their disciples' qualification for the path of attachment and thus instructed many Shakata-like people to accept service in the mood of manjaris and sakis commit offenses in the form of disrespecting confidential subject matters and fell down. Those who worship according to such instructions also gradually fall away from spiritual life because they do not attain the symptom of a deep attachment for those topics. Yet they may still be delivered by the association of devotees and proper instructions. This is called breaking Shakata. The living entities are sober by nature, but when they are disturbed due to possessing a body made of blood and flesh, it is called baladosha, or juvenile offenses. This is the fourth obstacle in the form of Vatsasura. The most clever Bakasura, who is the personification of cheating religion, clever not in the sense of intelligent, but in the sense of chalu, or crooked cleverness, is the fifth obstacle for Vaishnavas. This is called Namaparad, offenses against the holy name of the Lord. Those who do not understand their qualification, but accept the instructions of a bogus guru and engage in the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, are cheated, ass-like people. And those who have understood their ineligibility, yet with a goal to accumulate money and prestige, also follow the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, are called cheaters. Until this cheating in the name of religion is destroyed, one's attachment will not awaken. Such people deceive the entire world by making a show of sectarian formalities and pseudo-renunciation. Those who see and respect such proud people's show of external formalities cannot attain love for Krishna and are like thorns in the side of the world. It is to be understood here that one should not disrespect a swan-like person just because he has accepted external formalities that are generally considered detestable. It is the duty of Vaishnavas to develop the symptoms of love by associating with and serving devotees or remaining indifferent to external formalities. Agasura, the personification of intolerance and cruelty, is the sixth obstacle. Due to a lack of compassion for the living entities, there is a possibility that one's attachment will gradually diminish because compassion cannot remain separate from attachment. The basis of compassion for the living entities and devotion to Krishna is the same. These are all very deep topics, and this probably could be discussed for days and days and days and days, which we shall not do. If one intensely absorbs his mind in various arguments, opinions, and their respective literatures, then all realizations attained through samadhi are practically lost. This is called illusion based on the flowery words of the Vedas. Being overwhelmed with this illusion, Brahma doubted the supremacy of Krishna. The Vaishnavas should regard this illusion as a seventh obstacle. Subtle discrimination is extremely important for Vaishnavas. Those who invent social distinctions and preach the unbreakable principles of Vaishnavism while breaking them to suit their needs are said to possess gross discrimination. This gross discrimination takes the form of the ass Danuka. The ass cannot eat the sweet palm fruit trees, and he opposes others' attempts to eat them. The purport is that the previous acharyas of the authorized sampradayas have written many spiritual literatures which people with gross discrimination neither understand nor allow others to see. Ass-like devotees who are simply interested in the regulative principles and under the control of gross discrimination are unable to attain a higher platform. Vaishnava principles are so unlimitedly exalted that those who simply remain entangled in the regulative process without endeavoring to understand the science of attachment are comparable to ordinary food of workers. Therefore, until the ass Dhanukasura is killed, one cannot advance in the science of Vaishnavism. Many weak-hearted people gave up the path of regulative principles and enter the path of attachment. When they are unable to realize the soul's spiritual attachment, they behave like Vrishabhasura, Aristasura, the bull, by cultivating perverted material attachment. They will be killed by the prowess of Krishna. The example of this obstacle is regularly found amongst the selfish Dharmadwajis, the show-bottle devotees. Kaliya's malice always pollutes the waters of the Yamuna, which is the spiritual liquid of the Vaishnavas. It is everyone's duty to give up this tenth obstacle. The 11th, malice, envy. The 11th obstacle is of the Vaishnavas is sectarianism, which takes the shape of the forest fire. Due to a sectarianism, a person cannot accept anyone outside of his own group as a Vaishnava, and as a result he faces many obstacles in finding a guru and associating with devotees. Therefore, extinguishing the forest fire, this forest fire is most important. The impersonalist desire to merge the soul in the impersonal Brahman. In other words, searching for the liberation of complete merging is the defect of stealing the self, because there is no happiness in this state. Neither the living entity nor the Lord gain anything from this. If one believes the impersonalist philosophy, then he must accept the material world as false. One then denounces Brahman as indifferent and gradually develops doubts about the basis of Brahman. If one deeply discusses this topic, then he is compelled to accept meaningless nescience and non-existence of the living entities. Means a Buddhistic, impersonal. Thus all of mankind's endeavors and considerations become meaningless. Sometimes this philosophy enters amongst Vaishnavas in the form of pralambasura to spread anarthas in the form of stealing the self. This is the 12th obstacle in the Vaishnava science of love. The 13th obstacle for the Vaishnavas is the worship of minor demigods such as Indra with a desire for fruitive results even after become situated in the process of devotional service. The 14th obstacle in developing love for Krishna is stealing others' property and speaking lies. These create disturbances in Braja in the form of Vayomasura. The transcendental happiness of the living entities in Braja is known as Nanda. In order to enhance that happiness, some deluded people drink wine, and as a result they create the great anarta of forgetting themselves. Kidnapping Nanda to the abode of Varuna is the 15th obstacle for the Vaishnavas. People who are absorbed in the mood of Braja never drink wine. The desire for gaining fame and sense gratification through bhakti is called sankachuda. This is the 16th obstacle. Those whose actions are motivated by a desire for fame are also proud. Therefore, Vaishnavas should always be careful of such persons. As the Vaishnavas' happiness continually increases in the process of worship, they sometimes lose consciousness. At that time, the feeling of merging overcomes them. This feeling of merging with the Lord is the snake that swallowed Nanda Maharaj. A practitioner who remains free from this snake will become a qualified Vaishnava. Keshi, a demon in the form of a horse, personifies the practitioner's conception of being more expert than others in devotional service. When he comes to Braja, he creates a great disturbance. As a Vaishnava gradually begins proclaiming his own superiority, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord arises and the devotee falls from his position. Therefore, it is most important to prevent this evil mentality from entering the heart. Even if one is expert in devotional service, a Vaishnava will never give up the quality of humility. If one does so, then there is a need for killing Keshi. This is the 18th obstacle. Those who want to happily serve Krishna in the pure mood of Braja should carefully destroy the above-mentioned 18 obstacles. Some of these obstacles should be destroyed by a person's own endeavor and purity, and sons should be destroyed by the mercy of Krishna. A living entity is able to personally destroy the obstacles that are found under the shelter of religious duties through samadhi known as salvikalpa. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that these obstacles are actually destroyed by Baladev. But it is also described that the obstacles are destroyed by taking shelter of Krishna. That the obstacles destroyed that are destroyed by taking shelter of Krishna are actually destroyed by him, Krishna. Swan-like persons with subtle discrimination should carefully discuss these topics. Those who are on the path of Jnana should give up the offenses found in the realm of Mathura, and those who are on the path of fruitive activity should give up the offenses found in Dwarka. But the devotees should give up the obstacles that pollute the mood of Braja and be absorbed in love for Krishna. Krishna Samhita. Yes, by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna's Braja Lila ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.